This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
See, Travis, this is what you get. Inside all the private conversations.
Yeah, I don't get it. I'm super lost.
It's what happens when you are late to the podcast.
Yes.
I don't know what kind of shenanigans they run over on your other podcast, but on this Aftershock Central podcast, we are on time. We read the books. We are prepared.
Man, mea culpa, dude. You know, I left a few minutes late because I didn't realize we're still on for podcasting tonight. So, you know, that plus traffic is a stretch. But
hey, Ronnie, are you counting the number of excuses here?
Yeah, it sounds like our intern is dwindling down.
Too many excuses. Okay. All I want to hear is, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, there we go. Now we're better.
Man,
now
you're rehired. You're harder than Chris from Calgary.
Well, you know, I have a ship to run here. I don't know what he does over there, but...
Is it a starship?
Well, I do run the starship, yes. Do you like my explanation on why it's the starship?
I did.
Damn right you did.
I don't agree with it, but I understood it.
Listen, look up the definition. It's the ship that the commander is in. I'm the damn commander of this network, and therefore, whatever podcast I'm in is the starship. Okay?
Okay.
I'm a sci-fi guy. We don't do flagships anymore. That's old-timey. That's old-timey-wimey.
Yeah.
Okay, we're from the future here. We ride starships.
Dude, they refer to like starships as flagships in sci-fi.
Of course they do.
Yeah, but it's a starship because you're the star.
No, it's a starship because we're in space, and I'm the commander, and then 1 + 1 = 3. Bam.
But still, the Titanic was a flagship as well, and we know what happened to that.
too big to fail.
That podcast got canceled.
It's hard to be the flagship, dude. So Nerdy Legion, look out.
Hey, you know, it's true.
All right, Millie Vanilli.
People are tuning out. They're like, what are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
It was funny for a minute, but now it makes no sense.
Yeah, when we gotta start talking about Zach and Lonnie's book. When we gonna start talking about Adam Glass? That's what they want to hear.
We're talking about it right now. What do you mean? You just talked about
it. I know.
Podcast is over.
We're done.
It's over. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're all on Twitter. Go find us. Been fun. I'm not even drinking tonight, dude. I've got English breakfast tea.
That's fancy.
Fancy.
Well, I've got my pinky up, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta do it. Did any of you guys pick up the Dark Ark trade paperback?
Yes.
Yes. Did you flip through it?
Yeah.
Don't lie, you didn't flip through it.
I did. I mean, barely. I mean, I didn't like super inspect it or anything, but I flipped through it to make sure when it got shipped, nothing crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense. I got it locally, so I haven't flipped through it yet, but I did pick it up. I think that's going to read pretty good in trade.
Dark Ark?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think all of Cullen's books read a lot better in trade, especially the stuff he's doing at Aftershock.
Well, what doesn't read better in trade, dude? Like, it always does, because, like, so little is a single issue. Like,
I mean, like Peanuts. You can read Peanuts serialized.
Yeah,
I eat Peanuts. I don't read them.
Yeah, you eat something, all right. Got him.
You walked right into that one, dude.
The one I didn't pick up was the Animosity the Rise trade, because I couldn't find it. So I already got
that one in hardcover from local comic book shop day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got to pick that up.
Because that one was oversized. I'm not sure if this one is or not.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure if it is either. I'll see if I can track it down. If anything, I'll just order it on Amazon.
Or aftershock.com.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could do that, huh?
Well, wink, wink.
Use offer code Aftershock Central for 0% off.
That's right. For a free cease and desist shirt.
That's right. I made a new Aftershock fan tonight.
I saw that.
Yeah. Travis, I know that you've been slacking, doing work and stuff. Yeah, I made a new Aftershock reader tonight. He was a VCP fan, now he's listening to my new podcast, which I'm not going to plug because I'm not that kind of guy. But I will plug later because I am that kind of guy. And he was really interested in The Revisionist, which is funny because I just keep mentioning The Revisionist as a joke because the main character is Martin. And I guess he just sounded interested in the premise. So I went ahead and I gifted him issue 1 of the book. And I'll see what he thinks about it.
Nice. I like that one, dude.
Yeah, it's great. Any book that has a Martin in it is great.
That's true.
Then he's interested in Relay as well.
Yep, he sure is. I can't send him that, though, because it's not out yet.
Yeah. Once you, like, dangle the feather, then that's when we got him.
That's right. Got to rein him in.
Well, yeah, you got to read the books if you want to understand what the podcast is about, right?
Well, that's true.
Well, you don't have to. I don't read Valiant, but I listen to VCR.
What's that?
See? I'm just saying.
Never heard of it.
Hmm.
Is that movie company that makes comics?
It's the Chinese movie company that makes comics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the web series comes out in 2 days now.
Yeah, that's what they say.
I'll believe it when I see it. I've been down this road for a year now.
Oh, it's been longer than that, dude.
Well, since C2E2 last year.
Yeah. But it had already been a year at C2E2 last year.
Because Psylords is already on number 3.
Yeah. Psylords is canceled. That was,
It got solicited.
That was
in 2016.
That was Dinesh's dream project. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. Yes. Listen, we're not here to talk about Valiant, okay? This is not the Valiant Central podcast. There's no such thing. This is the Aftershock Central podcast.
I'm ready.
Get with the program. We have 2 very fine books to discuss tonight. First one that we'll discuss. I'm taking the lead as commander in saying we're going to be talking about Rough Riders, Ride or Die, number 3. Written by Adam Glass with art by Pat O'Leaf. I guess I should do the rest. Gabe Eltab on colors and Sal Cipriano on letters. I got to meet Sal, dude. Every Italian creator, we bond. Share recipes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Grandma recipes?
Grandma recipes.
Like you and RVD?
Dude, that's what I love about RVD. Every time we see each other, we're like talking food. We don't even talk comics anymore. RVD's the best.
That's when you know you're big time.
When we talk food instead of comics?
Yep.
I guess. Let's see here, Travis. Are you prepared for this podcast? Do you have nutshells for us?
I think I got some nutshells. I got a nutshell for Rough Riders.
Great. Tell me about it.
All right. So, after discovering that the Seance House used to belong to the Roosevelt family, they send Houdini into the afterlife via near-death experience to find Van Rosenvelt in, so let's see, what else? Houdini is greeted by his father in the afterlife and learns that Van Rosenvelt framed an innocent man for a Bokenrider to steal his wife and property. The man curses Van Rosenvelt's family and becomes a Bokenrider after death, which has allowed him to return to Earth for revenge. Unfortunately, Houdini learns that he was really in the presence of Death, who is resentful of being cheated by Houdini and intends to keep his soul this time. Meanwhile, Annie perceives that Madame Coffee, the vessel, is a descendant of Hans and is leading the army of the dead towards Roosevelt's family.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's a pretty good nutshell. So, yes.
A lot happens in this issue.
Yeah, a lot happens in this issue. A lot.
A lot happens in every Rough Riders issue.
Well, that's true, but I think more in this one, because there's a lot of reveals. And there's a lot of stuff that I wasn't expecting to happen in the book either. Because I know, like, in the first two issues, we talked a lot about whether, like, this will all be scienced away somehow. But just based on this issue, I'm wondering if, like, this, it really isn't just a lot of mystical stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Houdini, like, how else do you explain his, like, going into the afterlife or whatever, you know? Like, that's somewhat hard to science away.
Yeah, because he's not, like, taking shrooms, you know, and taking a nap. He literally gets killed by Edison. He gets shocked to death. He gets aftershocked. Ha-ha!
Like an elephant, right?
Sure. Is that what they do to elephants? That's terrible.
Edison, I believe, famously, like, electrocuted a bunch of animals. I think as a way to screw with, like, Tesla, like the other... He was either AC or DC in terms of what he was pushing. I think he was pushing, like, direct current, and Tesla was doing alternate current. And so he, like, electrocuted animals, most notably, like, a giant elephant, and like, kind of screwed up.
PETA's gonna cease and desist this podcast now.
Man, so I just looked this up. He freaking filmed it. What the hell is wrong with this man?
Because he's like, direct current is dangerous, so you should listen to me, Edison.
He made a 1-minute movie called Electrocuting an Elephant. By the way, it has an IMDb rating of 3.1.
I bet it didn't score very good on Rotten Tomatoes, though.
Nope, 24%. Well, I mean, who would want to watch that, dude? If anybody actually liked this movie, shame on you.
That it is like elephants, so they give it a thumbs up, although they're qualified.
Yeah, if you go to the Wikipedia page for Topsy the Elephant, you can actually watch the movie on the Wikipedia page.
But we don't recommend that.
We don't recommend that. And if you do watch it, give it a thumbs down.
So, back to the book.
What do you mean? We're talking about the book. Thomas Edison is a jerk.
Well, yeah. We knew that from, like, the first volume of Rough Riders, though.
From everything I've ever read about Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
All right, let me ask you guys this, all right?
Yes.
So we're talking about Houdini going to the afterlife, right?
Yes.
So he's in the afterlife, and Lovecraft shows up as a spirit because they have a connection, and he's like... Basically, I feel like he tells them, like he hints, like, you know, finding the information is not going to be the hard part for you. It's, like, what you'll meet, you know? So it almost seems to me like Houdini, like, Lovecraft knows that Houdini is going to be, like, confronted by death and will have to escape.
Correct.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, of course he would know that, because he sees dead people. He's the Sixth Sense guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that includes death, who's like, I don't know.
Well, to HP, though, it only makes sense if you've cheated death so many times that death's going to come looking for you. That's how.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you think he's ever had this kind of near-death experience? I'm curious how literal it is, whether he's actually crossed over before or whether it's just like you made a bunch of daring escapes which PS. I also got a kind of a like a Mr. Miracle vibe when I was reading this issue.
Never heard of it. You mean Kirby's Mr. Miracle?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The good one.
Ouch.
I agree, though. Like, I don't think Houdini has went this far, because most of his things are parlor tricks type thing. And he always wants to debunk stuff. So his reaction to the dead side, or
I see what you
the afterlife,
there.
Or whatever, and seeing his dad or papa, it is surprising to him. What makes me more curious, though, is that I don't think it's all supernatural at play, though. Because we all know from Houdini's side is that he never believed in the mystics and that type of stuff. So when he comes out of this, he's still going to debunk it or write it off as something else. If that makes sense.
No, that makes sense to me. And I hope that's how the this particular book ends, because that's how the previous volumes ended.
Right.
And just based on this issue alone, I'm like totally the opposite way now. It almost seems like a lot of this stuff is actually happening, you know? Because like when the book opens up with Annie and She-Wolf, the lady that took her in, she was a teenager. There's no way that Lovecraft would have known that, right? So you can do, what was that guy in the 90s? Like something Edwards.
John Edwards.
John Edwards,
right?
Yeah. Like all that
Biggest
stuff was set
in the
up.
Galaxy?
Yeah. All that stuff was set up, but there's no way that Lovecraft would have known this, unless he was actually there, right?
Right.
Because she's never written down or anything, and she goes through that whole spiel. Like, how the hell would he know that?
Right.
Now, she always has tried to forget that part of her life.
But Annie's not really a good example here, though, because she's supposed to be dead, but now she's alive.
Well, then wouldn't it have made sense for her to be the one to go into the dead side?
Characteristically, no. Because she's like the let's get shit done, as to where Houdini is skeptical anyways, and he is the escape artist. So if anybody can escape death like he has before, then it just makes sense for him to do it. Like for Annie, like her and Roosevelt's interaction was pretty powerful, just because Roosevelt is the president and, you know, all this is on him, as to where she's like, no, you're not getting it. You can't see the forest for the tree in front of your face, because it's all about all of us, not just about you.
Okay, but, like, to that point, you know, doesn't it now, at the end of this issue, seem like it's really just about Roosevelt, and more to the point, his family?
For sure.
Yeah, so I mean, it's possible that it doesn't impact the world at all, that really it is all about Roosevelt.
Yeah, I guess in a way, but who's to say that once their quote-unquote mission to get Roosevelt's family out of there, then they're going to stop. But yes, I think this is a big, elaborate parlor trick with Roosevelt as the target.
Yeah, I don't know how the parlor trick gets explained away with what Houdini's seeing, though.
Well, we're not going to see a Cthulhu.
Damn it!
We'll see. We shall see, dude. You know.
Maybe death is Cthulhu. Maybe we will see Cthulhu.
I don't think
sure.
So.
All right, fine.
Yeah, I mean,
Negative Nancy.
Do you not think that? So do you not think that, like, people are actually dying and coming back? You know, like somebody got their chest, like, punched in.
Yeah.
So that looked pretty real.
That did look pretty real.
I don't know. I could see it being real, but I see your guys' point as far as the trope. It's like Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah, but it's exactly like Scooby-Doo.
But in Scooby-Doo, nobody ever had an arm go through their freaking chest.
Well, no, because Scooby-Doo's PG, sir.
Well, that's why it's not as good as Rough Riders.
That's why you got to watch Scooby Natural, where Supernatural crossed over with Scooby-Doo. Because hashtag real shit happens there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me put that on my list here.
Yeah, you'll get to it in about 2020.
Yep, just about. It's too much TV, man. The 100's coming back. 3%'s coming back. I don't have time for that.
Yeah. But I liked the tandems here. Like, Jack, of course, is going to stay with Harry because they're the duo. And, of course, you have the big, powerful guy of the group stay with and protect over somebody that's isn't going to be able to protect himself. And then you have, like, the wild card, I guess you'll say, with Annie, that she's going to go with Roosevelt. But so where is Roosevelt's family at? Obviously at their house. I get that.
Yeah,
but
right.
I mean, like, are they, from where the group is at, is it like hundreds of miles away? Because the Horde is outside their door.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they come up with like a steampunk blimp or a train or something, they're not going to make it there in time. Yes, no, maybe.
I mean, it depends where they're at, but yeah, I see your point.
Probably too far away to get there within minutes.
I mean, like, is Roosevelt living at the White House? Because if so, I mean, like, that's pretty far.
I mean, it seems like they're traveling down New Jersey, you know, like, given the cities that they called out. So I don't know that you know, going south that way, like the easiest way is to like if that's a direct route to D.C. or not. I should know because I grew up on the East Coast. But
well, still, like, I would say from New Jersey to D.C., it's still 4 hours, 3 hours now, but back then, you know, because they're at Rutgers University. That's where they're at.
Right. Yeah, so, that's in Jersey.
Yeah. So in modern times, it takes 4 hours to get there.
Yeah, from Jersey to D.C., probably about 3 or 4 hours.
So that's what I'm saying, and I don't know how – I don't know. It didn't really take them long to get from D.C. where they were at – well, they were at Roosevelt's daughter's wedding, though, right, when this whole caper started?
Yep.
And I don't remember where that was at, though.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
Well, I think they started this issue in New York. I think the right, like, isn't the Roosevelt House in New York, like old New Amsterdam?
Yep.
And then they like, you know, hear about something in New Jersey, start going that way, and it's moving down New Jersey, so.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the first issue, and his daughter gets married at the White House on the lawn.
Okay. So, yes, then we assume that the two smaller kids and his wife is at D.C. then, yeah, in the White House.
Right. Right.
So then do we still split up? Because Jack and Harry still, well, they're at Rutgers too, but are they going to wait for them, or are they just going to bolt and go?
No, they're going to have to split up if they need to save family.
Yeah.
There's no way they can get there in time. But I didn't get, though, because so that last page when World of Zombies are coming to the house where Roosevelt's wife and kids are, Madame Coffee is right there in the middle of it. And, like, she had just been at Rutgers because she, like, infected that sorority house right when they were playing badminton.
Is she right there in the middle of it?
Yeah, she's got the red around her head.
Okay.
With her arms up.
Okay. Yeah, and, yeah, I see her. And I see Dum Dum Dugan there with his bowler hat.
Yep, Dum Dum Dugan.
And yeah, then, well, I mean, suffice to say that, like, in terms of, you know, is his family going to survive or not? You know, like, so far, the broad strokes of history, I feel, are kind of, like, kept intact with, like, events in this story.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Obviously, you shouldn't, we don't really believe that, like, you know, the Rough Riders in, like, the Spanish-American War went down like that, but, like, you know, they haven't contradicted history in a, like, provable way that makes it, like, truly alternate reality. So I think that, like, his family, it will survive for that reason.
Well, he does have a couple of children that that died at early age, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, Franklin Jr. wasn't even one when he died. So, and then, let's see. There's another one too. John. So there's at least two, and we see four on the last page. Four of the six kids. So maybe that's how they say that one of the kids dies. But then, you know, in real history, he died at infancy or whatever.
That's pretty cool. I mean, not cool, but, you know. That's
yeah,
a good,
right.
Good call.
A good spin on it. Because, like, I think Martin said on some other podcast, like Comic Talk Tomorrow or
Never
something
heard
like that.
Fake
It's not alternate history. It's, like, in-between history. Right? Isn't that what you said?
Yes.
That's to where it's, like, it fills in the gaps instead of actually trying to change stuff that happens. It's explaining stuff in quote unquote secret. And then, you know, media put a spin on it for a different way. Conspiracy theories.
Yeah. So, you know, another thing that I thought was cool is, you know, reading this, like the Annie story that they opened the issue with. I did some searches and it seems like that's real facts, you know, like
yep.
she lived with a family that she called the Wolves and they abused her mentally and physically. So reading that kind of stuff really makes me wonder like how much research, you know, like they're doing when they're like putting this stuff together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, well, when we talk to Adam on the show, he's like a super history nerd. So he loves that stuff and he loves these characters. That's why he picked them. So that's just much of his fandom to throw little nuggets like that in there.
Refresh my memory. What year are we in now?
2018.
1906. Okay, never mind. I found it. I mean in the book, bro. Get with the program. Okay.
Why? Are you trying to line up stuff?
I'm just, I was just trying to research some stuff as we were discussing this thing. It's fine. We're good. We can continue.
Okay.
Continue. I was just looking into his kids because Alice is from his first marriage and the other five kids are from his second marriage.
Okay.
And
we don't really, we're assuming that this is his second marriage, right?
Yeah, this would have been his second marriage.
Okay.
He got married to his second wife in 1886.
Okay. So they're good and established at this point.
Yep. Which would make, how old is, they don't even show on here when she died. Okay, they got married in 1880 to his first wife. And then Alice was born in 84. So she would be like 22 happening. Okay, we can continue. Sorry, I got sidetracked. Anything else that we're missing on this issue?
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Roosevelt's great-great-grandfather must be related to Edison because he is also a major D-bag.
Yes, he is.
Major D-bag. It was interesting, though. I wonder, had this been a longer story, I feel like Adam Glass could have easily played a lot with, like, the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
And I know this is, like, a different area of the country, but it's very similar, right? Like, those people are getting accused of being witches, not because they were actually witches, but because people wanted things from certain parts of those families.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much exactly what Roosevelt's great-great-great-great-grandfather was doing here.
Yeah.
So it's just the Dutch version.
Yeah, well, it seemed like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were Dutch up there, too.
Yeah. Pilgrimage.
Yes, the pilgrimage. Right, I think it's time to rate this book up. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 5 for sure. Because we only got one issue left. And... Really? I thought so.
I thought it was 5 issues.
Okay, well, I'll be pleasantly happy then. Because you might be right. Well, on the last page, it says number 4, final issue.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Because, like, there's going to be a huge void when this is all said and done and over with. Mm-hmm. I might cry myself to sleep a couple times.
Shame on you, Adam Glass, for going to DC. Cool.
I'll go next. I'm going to give it also 5 out of 5. Full contact badminton tamos.
I'm going to give this a 1906 out of 5. I don't have a tamos. I just love this book.
Shuttlecock Tamos.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. This is a family show.
Yeah, I said the family word. They played that game back in the day.
Uh-huh. Sure they did. I did look up this other guy, what's his name? Van Host, or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know if that's like a typical Dutch name or whatever, but there was a Jost... Whatever the host.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly spelled that way, right?
No, it was spelled exactly the same way.
Okay.
But the timeline was off because it was like 100 years before whatever happened, the flashback in this issue. But it was, what's his name? John Van Host. We'll just go with that. He was a Dutch cartographer. So I'm sure there's some kind of connection. I don't know how popular that name is. All right, let's move on to the next one. The greatest book of all time.
Whoa.
No? Okay, Her in Front of the Set number one. This is written by Lottie Nadler and Zach Thompson. The art is Kyle Charles, also co-creator. D. Cuniff on colors and Ryan Ferrier on letters. Now, Travis, if you have a nutshell, we'll do it. But I would rather go through this book like page by page, kind of.
Or in sections. Yeah. I don't have a nutshell, so have at it.
Fantastic. So, I guess we can start from the beginning. I went really deep in on this book. I read this thing, like five times. As I've mentioned on multiple podcasts that I do, I'm a huge Dante fan. And Inferno is one of my favorite things of all time. And so I was very intrigued by this book and the way that Zach and Lonnie are playing with the idea of Inferno. And a lot of the story beats are pretty much like identical to the way that it happens in Inferno, except Dante's not the main character. We have Lynn, who is a mother in like deep depression. Her family's gone, and she kind of wants him back. And then as she's putting some stuff away in the attic, which as she's climbing up the attic, it's like one of my favorite pages of this book because she's climbing up the attic, but the page is drawn upside down. So she's climbing down. And when she gets there, she meets William Blake and he talks in rhyme the entire book. And kind of guides her through at least the first circle of hell as she tries to find her family. So I don't know how you guys want to tackle the discussion for this book, but I guess give me some initial reactions.
I overall, like everything, I totally dug the hell out of this book because the art, some of the examples that was used like during each stage were amazing. I think even her in her depression, and it's hard for her to even go up the stairs, like to shut the blind to let the, or no, to get into the attic. Sorry. That's the part where you're talking about where it goes sideways, right?
Yeah. It's like page four or five. It's pretty early on.
Yeah. But I think like even she doesn't want to go up those stairs and it's metaphorically going the other way than, you know, descending into hell type thing. So instead of going up like Jacob's ladder type thing, that's why we flip on the side and go sideways. And then, of course, you know, Jimi Hendrix. That's my favorite panel in the whole book with Jimi Hendrix there.
Okay, yeah, so, like, the whole thing's an Easter egg hunt, right? Like, and I think I would guess that's maybe what the whole series is going to be, you know? Like as we go through the levels of hell, you know, I think each one's going to be a certain like category of people. It's just going to be like historic or pop culture like representations of those.
Correct.
And so like, I don't know if you guys want to run down like the Easter eggs as far as like dead people in this issue.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, we can, sure.
All right, so
I've got some Easter eggs of my own.
Okay. Well, I'll just run through, like, in this issue, they're talking about writers, which I guess, you know, includes musicians as well. And the ones that I have, I believe, are Jimi Hendrix, David Foster Wallace.
Yep.
Milton, Plato, Aristotle,
yep.
Homer, Ovid, Aristotle, Cervantes. There's like a dude in like kind of like Spanish knight armor. I assume
it was Cervantes, actually.
Yeah. Okay. There was a lady who I put as Virginia Woolf. A dude in a suit who I think is Leonard Cohen.
Correct.
And I think that Judge K at the end, to me, suggests Franz Kafka.
Yeah, that's what I got too, which I thought was really interesting. Because I tried to figure out who that was originally. But with it being Kafka, I think it would make total sense because, you know, this is kind of like a metamorphosis for the main character as she's diving into the nine circles of hell. So I like that. I like Kafka.
Well, also Kafka is like the authority in limbo, I think, is like a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he often called himself K in like his novels, like the protagonist in his works was called K.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I dug it.
And we had Poe and Shakespeare as well.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Now I wonder. You said Virginia Woolf. What if it's Agatha Christie? Because Agatha Christie comes up quite a few times in this issue.
Yeah, that's who I thought it was.
Well, I figure she would have reacted for Agatha Christie. But I also, like, I found some, like a poem or something where Virginia Woolf references anonymous women, which is, like a reference in the issue.
Right.
So, yeah, that's my guess on that one.
Yeah, no, that's possible. I mean, she's got, there's a couple of, like, famous Virginia Woolf pictures where she's wearing that coat that the character in this book is wearing, so that's very possible. I don't know. I don't think it's been stated, and I'm not sure if it's going to be stated in the subsequent issues. And I mean, to go to your point about it can't be Agatha because she doesn't react, like, I think one thing that's really important about this character, and that's going to go into my crazy theory time at the end, and is that, you know, this character has no emotional reaction to anything.
Yeah.
Right? She's completely dead inside.
Yeah.
Which is understandable because her family is dead.
Yep.
Right? And and one of the main themes of this book is loss and grief. And I talked to Lonnie and Zach on my other podcast, Comic Talk Today. So you can go check that out. nerdlegion.com/episodes/CTT-16. And the whole book is set up around that premise. So the one thing we haven't discussed yet is the formatting of the book. Because every single page in this book, aside from when she's going to the attic, is either 5 panels or 9 panels. And that was a very conscious choice by Zach and Lonnie because it's the 5 stages of grief and the 9 circles of hell.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting that they would do it that way because I don't feel like, and I guess for a lot of comics, it doesn't really matter like how you format the book really. I know like Tom King, for example, really loves the 9-panel grid and I understand why writers choose that to tell stories. But it seems like for the majority of comics, most writers don't tend to focus on the detail of how the book is formatted because it doesn't really make any difference overall to the story itself. But in this book in particular, I think having that in the back of your head on conscious choice of panel layouts does add a little extra to the story itself. You know, like one thing I really like about Matt Kent's independent work is that he's very conscious about the form of his story and how each page is structured. And in particular, in like Mind Management, where he's doing the stuff on like the side of the panels, there's like little writings and things like that. And for like a good chunk of the series, that stuff doesn't really matter. But as you get deeper and deeper into the book, those things in the margins actually do impact what's being told in the story.
Yeah. If it's wrote down, it matters in mind management. Which I think you're right. It parallels to this as well. I think nothing's there by chance.
Yeah,
kind of like what we were saying, like with Phil Hester's art and like Shipwreck, for example.
Coming soon. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully.
I know he's
Will Ellis.
He's drawing it again. I saw him talking about it.
Awesome.
Yeah, the Weekend of C2E2. He tweeted out that he was working on some pages for Shipwreck.
Dude, I love Shipwreck. I can't wait for that.
But back to this.
Yeah, back to
okay.
this.
So let me ask you this, all right? Like, talking about this character. You know, I feel like they make some reference to her needing, like, her family's forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I it's notable, I think, that like the way that they get into the story, they don't address specifics of, you know, what happens to family and how long it's been since it happened. You know, like we see kind of flashbacks here of them, you know, like I would assume a long time ago, like when they're much younger. So I think that's a choice, but I'm kind of curious about that element of it, you know.
I took it like her needing their forgiveness is like her guilt of still being alive, because that's part of the grief and emotional state, right? Is that she's feeling not only depressed and lonely without them, she's also feeling guilty because she's still alive and they're not.
So originally that was also my thought. So I think it's time that we get into some crazy theory time.
Okay.
And I could be completely wrong, but if you don't want to be spoiled, you might want to quit listening and fast forward 5 minutes. So in my original reading, I agree. I thought, you know, the reason that she's so absent-minded and so on. Like, you know, when a ghost shows up in her attic and she has no reaction whatsoever, right? Like, she's traveling through hell and she's meeting all these famous people and she's like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm just going to keep going, you know? Like, there's zero emotional reaction whatsoever to any event that she encounters. And that was really weird to me. And, of course, my original reaction is, well, yeah, she lost her family. Right, like if she's going through the stages of grief, then she's at the very beginning, right? She's still in denial, kind of things. But the more and more I read it, I began noticing the Agatha Christie references. And if I don't know if you guys have the book in front of you, but in the what page is this? The very first page. Okay, we're zooming out on the dinner table.
Uh huh.
If you look on the third panel down, on the bottom left-hand corner, there's a copy of Murder in 3X.
Yes.
And not to spoil anything, but when you get a chance, look up the plot of Murder in 3X. And to me, it seems like the reason she feels this guilt is not because her family's gone and she's still here, but that she caused her family to die in some way.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if she purposely killed her family yet. I'm kind of leaning that way, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I feel in some way she's responsible for them not being around anymore. And
that was my reading, too.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with the way she acts as well. Because one way to justify to herself that it's okay that she killed her family is for her to have no emotion whatsoever on anything. And like, I don't know how much you guys read about like serial killers or anything like that. But like, these are like typical symptoms of like psychopathy. You know what I'm saying? Where they're just completely disconnected from the events that they actually commit.
Yeah. With no remorse or that type of stuff, though.
Correct. But you do have in some serial killers that, like, it's not quite remorse, but they want some kind of, like, remembrance because they're committing these murders to, like, almost reenact certain events in their lives at times. And there are serial killers that become very attached to some of their victims as a result of that. And I wonder if part of the reason she doesn't want to find her family is kind of that, right? Like, they're not there anymore, but she just kind of wants to relive their presence for a few minutes.
Okay. So do you think then, since you think that she killed her family, do you think she poisoned them, like in Murder of Three Acts?
I mean, that would make sense to me. Like, just based on the Agatha Christie references in the book.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I think that's going to be an integral part of the story going forward. And when I talked to Zach and Lonnie, like, I kind of teased that. But, of course, I didn't want them to answer.
Right.
So I kind of cut that short. But based on what they told me, there's going to be some stuff revealed in the next issue. And then we'll finally see what the events that led to this journey are in issue 4.
Okay. And this is 12 issues, right?
It's 5 issues.
Oh, it's 5. Okay.
Yep, 5 issues.
So, do you mind if I, like kind of clarify the premise, like a general premise?
Sure.
Of, like, where it's headed? Because, like, I mean, you know, it seems to me like, you know, Blake rolls in, right? And you know, basically he's offering her a chance to find the family. But it seems that it entails, like offering something to Satan or... she must give him his due, is what it said. So she's gotta climb the levels of hell and give Satan his due. And Blake is doing all this, I guess, because he knows what it's like to lose a child or something. So that's why he's involved. But maybe he's not even involved anymore because he can't actually wait. Is he still along on the journey? Like, he made reference that he couldn't go where they are.
Well,
you mean on the boat ride?
He said something along the lines that thought of, like, well, I can't take you right to your family, so, like, I'll take you as far as I can, or something.
Wait, I'm confused. Say that again?
Blake?
Yeah?
Like, I don't think he can take her all the way to the family, you know?
No. I think what you're referring to is with Cheros, the ferryman.
Yeah,
because he won't let her go into hell because she's not dead. I don't think that was a reference to Blake not being able to take her to where they're at. I think it was a reference to her not being allowed to be in there. Because that place is only for dead people and she's not dead.
Yeah.
And the reason that the ferryman lets them through is that Blake starts reciting poetry. And the way that Zach and Lonnie explained that is in Inferno, one way to defeat a demon is not to battle them physically, but to overcome them with emotion with, like, really deep verse. And so that's why Chero starts crying and lets Lynn and Blake go to the other side.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay, crazy theory. Is it possible that Blake is a demon because I heard that demons love rhyming?
So,
Ronnie?
Are you saying that all poets are demons?
Yes, Blake is Etrigan. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, Etrigan is the best. I think you've just been reading too many DC comics.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, I guess. Maybe that's why he's allowed to go find her, because he is part of the system in hell.
I mean, like, what if he was just, like, a recruiter for hell? Was like, yeah, I say that I go to heaven, too, but really, like, I work for the devil and I send people his way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very possible. And that would kind of go along with the crazy theory also, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, she's going to find her family, but this is really where she belongs.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, I wonder if there will be some kind of redemption for this character. And I know it's super early, right? We only have one issue. But, you know, as terrible as killing your family is, if that is what happens in this book, like, maybe there is a reason why it happened, right? Like, maybe her husband was abusive to her and the kids. Or, like, he was a child molester or something. You know what I'm saying? And she felt like that was the only way out for them.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason she didn't kill herself is because she feels like she has to live with the guilt because she allowed whatever to happen to her family.
Okay. That makes sense, kind of. Yeah. Before we final thoughts and whatnot, who, okay, so it, you have the book in front of you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You have Jimi Hendrix and then the short guy and
Leonard
then
Cohen.
Okay. And then who's the woman?
Virginia Woolf.
Okay. And then we have the stoner looking guy.
David Foster Wallace.
Yeah, right.
Okay, okay. I just wanted to make sure that I had those right in my notes, but because I know we already talked about it, but we just, like, talked about the famous ones that were in here, so I just wanted to double check.
Yep. No problem. All right.
Martin, one more question for you, actually.
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, you're a fan of the Inferno. Inferno is, like, part one of a trilogy, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, is there a possibility that there are, like, series, you know, potential, like, extensions of the series, like beyond this one?
You know, I didn't ask him about that. I mean, I can. But I don't think it will be. Just based on what I know about these guys and the way that they write, I think this will have a definite conclusion to the story itself. And I don't think we'll see Lynn go into paradise or anything like that.
That is satisfying yet bittersweet.
Well, why is that?
Bittersweet because we only get 5 issues of this goodness.
Sure.
But sweet because I don't know if I want her to have redemption.
Yeah, like, you know, like, it, depending how the story unfolds and what the events were that led us here, like, I don't think she seems like a person that would deserve redemption.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have the details yet, you know, like, I think we might be jumping to conclusions about what happened.
Sure, sure, absolutely. I'm going to give a little hint for anybody that wants to think ahead a little bit. The song Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head is very key to the way that the story unfolds.
Oh. All right.
Hmm. That's Burt Bacharach.
Yes. Huh. All right.
Yes. If you want to look ahead, go read the lyrics. Mm-hmm. Think about the stuff that we talked about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if you can come to some new conclusion.
Cool.
In fact, I'll put in the show notes a Spotify playlist that I made that was created by Zach and Lonnie. And that might give you some more hints on what this book is about.
Because that's what we do here. We bring awesome goodness.
All right, I think it's time to rate this one up. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to give this a 3 million out of 5. Because I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I went really deep into this book. I researched like every little thing that I saw. And of course, I got to talk to Zach and Lonnie, so I got more insight from them as well. But I really, really loved it. It's one of those types of stories that I generally don't like, but the way that the setting that it's set in really falls in my wheelhouse, so it's really working for me very well.
So how many times are you up to in read-throughs?
I don't know. I think probably 5.
Okay. I was going to say over or under, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 5 out of 5 along the Watchtower tables, which I hope is on that playlist. It probably isn't, but...
I don't know. Let me up in Spotify and I'll tell you.
It is now.
Well, I mean, you just wouldn't have Jimmy say that for no apparent reason, though. That's
sure.
What I'm saying.
Oh, no,
it's like everything's here.
It's a reference.
Yeah.
But also, you know, asterisk to that is Jimmy didn't write that lyric.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, like Dylan is still kicking. It fits for the scene, but it's not a line that Jimmy wrote.
So
no,
All Along the Watchtower is on the playlist.
Ding, ding, ding. Bonus points.
Yeah, the playlist kicks off with "The End" by The Doors.
Ooh,
because Apocalypse Now is a big inspiration for this book.
All right.
Yep. All right, Travis, it's your turn, bro.
All right, because Ronnie kind of stepped on my Tamo, I'm gonna go 5 out of 5 double page / Tamos because. That, you know, that splash page where like, she's going, like, up / down the staircase.
Yep.
Like, that looks amazing.
Yep. Agreed.
We're not, like, we don't see it side by side in the PDF, so I had to, like, scroll between the two. But, like, that looks, like, pretty spot on. Like, I can't wait to see it side by side.
Nice. All right. Next week, we only have one book. And that book is Baby Teeth, number 10, Donny Cates and Gary Brown.
We only need one book next week. Because it's like last week, we had 3 great books, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this week, we had... unanimous 5 out of 5, 2 books.
Yep.
And I'm going to go with a prediction, and I'm going to go all the way to Vegas for this one. But I'm pretty sure next week's going to be a 5 out of 5 for a single book.
Mm.
So,
well,
I
was thinking, since we only have one book, maybe we can spend some time talking about the Shock Anthology.
That's cool with me. I can't wait.
Yeah. And we don't have to go through every story in there if you don't want to, but at least we can hit up on a few of the stories.
Yeah, I think we should each pick a couple of the stories that we like the best.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. If you are a trade person, next week is also Animosity Year 1, which is Animosity 1 through 8 and World of Animosity number 1.
That's a hardcover too, right?
I believe so, yes.
Damn it. Just take my money all the time.
Joe, quit taking everyone's money. Dang it.
We need to have Joe on here again, too.
Yeah, yeah, we need to bring Joe back.
Or Mike.
Sure. Actually, yeah, we haven't had Mike on. Maybe we should have Mike on.
Yeah, because I'm sure he's probably more entertaining than Joe is. So.
Oh, you know Joe listens to this. He's going to text you and be like, Ronnie, I know. Fired.
So is Mike, though. So, I mean, caught in the middle.
That's why you just sing their praises, both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Aftershock Central podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, you're a new listener. Because I bought a book for you. well, here's the thing, right? Back in the day, that was a Valiant fan thing too, right? Not so much in the modern days, but there's still people that do it. But back in the 90s, like Valiant fans used to go to comic shops and have little books or whatever to hand out to people just to give it a shot. Some of that stepped into the modern era. And because I've been a Valiant fan for so long, if I find something that I really enjoy, I want to share with people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want people just to read the same stuff all the time.
Right.
So
it gets people to try new things.
Absolutely.
And there's so much goodness, comic-wise, outside the big two, even, that some people aren't as open-minded to try different things.
Sure.
So, sometimes all you got to do is just, hey, try this. And I think that's the cool thing about Aftershock 2 is there isn't just one genre or one thing. Because if for example, my friend Donnie that went to C2E2 with me, his thing is like the religious part of it, kind of like Mike Myers.
Yeah,
right. So, he snatched up Dark Ark because also he likes Cullen Bunn, but, the religious side got him going there. Mm-hmm. That's to where, Dewan likes... I don't even know what he grabbed, but Dewan grabbed something else because that's what he wanted or was into. So
nice. No, that's good.
Yeah. So let me jump on that though, because like that speaks to kind of low risk sampling. Like you're like, hey, check this out. The first taste is free.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Correct.
So, I was thinking that, for instance, on Comixology might be an interesting thing to, discount issue one of a series, the Aftershock series, So it's 99 cents or something, So you can, check it out and be like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'll buy the next issue,
Yep,
I agree. Matter of fact, I talked with Jay yesterday about that. On that other podcast, Comic Talk Today.
Here we go.
Get it everywhere. Vault just did that, right? And I know Ronnie, we were joking on our Discord chat about that. Yeah. Vault was supposed to have two books come out this past week. And for some reason, Diamond only shipped one of them. And
they were supposed to have three.
Three books, yeah. And they only shipped one. And so... the other two books are shipping next week, so it's not that big a deal. But I guess Bolt didn't want people to think that it was because of them. So they created a webpage on their site where you can get the first issue of those two books that are out next week now for free.
Yeah.
As a PDF.
And they didn't want to be...
Yeah. And I think that's really cool, and it's something that I wish more people did. I think it's important for... small publishers, if you want to get the word out, to do those kind of things.
It's good PR, right?
Absolutely. And I know margins are tight for smaller companies, but if somebody doesn't want to buy your book at $3.99, sell them for 99 cents and see if more people pick them up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And maybe after that, they'll get hooked in.
Agreed.
Yeah. We didn't talk about this new book that was announced either, Clan Killers.
Yeah, shame on you.
Shame on me. Shame on you.
I was at C2E2 when you guys recorded.
Well, that's an excuse.
It is.
You guys are full of excuses tonight.
But that made me go read Sean's past stuff, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's doing Betrothed.
Well, yes, and he's doing Coyotes as well.
Yeah, Coyotes, right.
And that book is awesome, too, but...
I haven't read it yet. I picked one up. I think you had mentioned it. I still gotta read. What's the other one that you keep talking about? It's got two names.
I read so many, you're gonna have to give me more than that, bro.
Oh.
That's Jared Law?
Yes, that's it.
What? Spencer and Locke?
Yeah, Spencer and Locke.
Yeah, Spencer and Locke's definitely a go.
Yeah, I picked that up, but I also haven't read it.
Shameful.
Yeah, you should jump on that, dude.
Yeah? All right. Since Travis says it, then I'll go ahead and read it.
Well, here, let me tweet Nick, and Nick will seal the deal for me.
Oh, man. I finally got Jazz Maynard last night, so... But, anyway, so yeah, Clan Killers is coming in July. It's like, I don't know, dude. It looks like Star Wars to me. Which I'm okay
really?
With. No?
Okay.
I mean, I haven't seen preview images, but just the story seemed like a magical version of Star Wars.
Okay.
And I'm down with that. I don't have any problem with that. So that's coming out July 18th. And then we've got other stuff, new stuff, man. Next month is A Walk Through Hell.
Yes.
The new Garth Ennis book.
Yep.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
We've got Free Comic Book Day in like a week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks.
Yep.
That's Relay number 0.
Yep.
Which Relay doesn't come out until July, end of July, I think, like the 25th.
I think so, yeah.
And then we also have, for next month, is there anything?
I think Dark Arc starts back up.
The new arc, issue six. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
There is a new Pestilence coming back next month also.
Yeah.
Pestilence. Oh, nice.
Yeah, Pestilence, the Story of Satan.
Yeah.
So that'll be really good.
Yeah.
And then in June, we've got The City of Los Explorers, which I know Ronnie's very excited about.
I am.
You are. That's Zach Kaplan.
Yep.
Who's pretty
and
awesome.
And I got to talk to him a little bit about it, too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Dude, why don't you tell him to come on the show?
I did.
Oh, okay, good.
Everybody that I talk to either, A, listens to us already and is waiting for an invitation to come on the show or wants to come back on. So.
Well, you're the secretary. Get on that.
Okay. I'll go through the proper channel.
Yeah, I really like that Port of Earth he's doing over at, what is it, Image, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Port of Earth is really good.
Yeah.
So City of Lost Explorers is out June 20th, which is my wife's birthday. So and, I know what I'm getting her for her birthday.
Yeah.
A copy of City of Lost Explorers from me.
And I don't, okay, to go back to Clan Killers.
Yeah.
It's a teenage killer that kills her parents, like in a teen rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess based on the description, you're right. I'm going by the cover, dude.
Boondock Saints style.
Yeah, I guess. I'll reread the description. The cover looks like Luke Skywalker and Sith Lord.
Okay. All right.
I'm just
you're wrong, but okay.
I know I'm wrong. It's fine. I can admit when I'm wrong. I don't know anything about comics. I've never read a comic in my life.
Timestamp this.
All right, I think it's time to wrap it up. There's too many shenanigans going on here. We're trying to run an empire of podcasts here, Ronnie.
I know. Because we are the first and only.
Well, we're the second but only. There used to be another Aftershock podcast.
It wasn't dedicated to Aftershock only, though.
It was.
Oh, all right.
What was it called? Aftershock 10.0, I think it was called.
2.0?
No, 10.0. You know, like 10 on the Richter scale.
I get it. It just, it's a dad joke.
Dad jokes. Yeah, that was, it was friend of the show, well, friend of mine, Chris Parton and Ed were doing
and
that.
And Ed, okay, yep. Okay, gotcha.
Yep, but I think they only did like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah.
So, if you want Aftershock podcasting, sorry, but you're stuck with us. You've been listening to the Aftershock Central Podcast, Travis, Ronnie, and myself. You can find us on Twitter. Travis is at The Great Magnet. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. There's a Facebook group. There's an email that we never check. And I think that's
I check it.
It
all the time.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I never check email. I'm the worst at checking email.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's it. We'll be back next week.
Have a great week.
Shock the world.